top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die, only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 341 of the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a perfect getaway. Now, as we emerge from the pandemic, a lot of people's minds are turning to that, oft-awaited vacation. Considering everyone's under lockdown and going a little bit stir-crazy and wanting to resume whatever semblance of normalcy they can. Case in point, yours truly, who is sanguinely or optimistically booked a vacation to New York City for August, despite having not even had dose one of the two rounds of COVID vaccine doses, because the jurisdiction I'm in seems to be really sitting on its hands in that regard. And it's really bizarre to see Twitter and your Twitter feed blowing up with all sorts of people all over the world, particularly in the Anglosphere hemisphere. Americans just outpacing us when it comes to getting everyone vaccinated en masse, and it's extremely pathetic and embarrassing given how much Canadians love to just blow our own horns when it comes to our much vaunted healthcare system. But I digress. My perfect getaway is, as I mentioned, not the kind that involves all-inclusive and lying on a beach and drinking Mai Tais by the pool, as that's something I believe that gets old pretty quick. But there's no denying that as a setting for a horror film, this one, 2009's A Perfect Getaway, directed by David Tuohy, is really a project that makes ample use of just an incredible, just mind-blowing geography and vistas of Hawaii and the smaller islands outside of the main ones. It's just fantastic, not to mention the fact that this is a movie that puts itself at an immediate disadvantage by virtue of taking place during daylight. And it's obviously much easier, or at least I would think that it's much easier to generate scares, particularly jump scares, when you're skulking about in total darkness. And that's something that most horror films take advantage of. The key ones that don't would be maybe Tenebrae, or most notably, I would say TCM, the first one from 1974, which is just bathed in a beautiful amber glow that Toby Hooper provided us. But it's certainly a challenge, and not one that David Tuohy backs down from. I have to admit, he's written a lot of films, and he directed Chronicles of Riddick, and I honestly don't even know what that is. Like, is it a biopic of Riddick Bowe, the heavyweight boxer? I have no clue. It just sounds to me something like superhero-y, something that would be an immediate turnoff to me. But he brings a really savvy, cool directorial feel to this one. And A Perfect Getaway is something that I've brought up with Jeff on our podcast prior. And it's a movie that's been referenced a couple times. And I rented it back in the day when Toronto still had a couple of functioning bricks and mortar video stores. And I'm not entirely sure why I did, particularly. I mean, the cast is undeniably good. I mean, as a huge fan, and I've said this on countless occasions, Deadwood, you got the sheriff from that show, who's the Timothy Oliphant, who's pretty great and maybe hamstrung by a bit of a saggy, kind of cheesy script in the George Romero reboot of The Crazies. It wasn't the hottest thing there. I've seen him in a few horror things, but he acquits himself so capably and amply here as a Delta Force vet and a fast-talking like alpha military guy who his girlfriend jokes can't be killed. And it's an ongoing running joke in this film that the guy's such a badass that he's basically indestructible. And it's maybe something who might have been included in our book, Mine's Bigger Than Yours. It's a celebration of wacky action films. But he walks that tightrope between like cheesiness and yet steely-eyed veracity and verisimilitude and believability. He looks like he's someone who could kill you quickly. And that really serves him well in the role of Nick, who's a tourist in this one of these islands in Hawaii. So what you get is like the beginning of this is one of my least favorite conceits, and that's the even though it's not found footage per se, but video footage, and it takes place at a wedding with people wishing a bride and groom well, various people who are drunk at a wedding, and then it has like the 1080p in the side and the battery life, and it's something I'd sooner not see. So right off the bat, the first 5 to 10 minutes, you're just thinking, boy, this is going to be a total crap show, and what did they do? Did they just mushroom cloud this whole production right off the bat with something that's just unpalatable aesthetically? But, boy, lo and behold, did they ever redeem themselves when they get on with the film. And what you have is this just stunning aerial overhead helicopter travel vista, travel vlog quality beauty of Hawaii, and my wife consistently points out, much to my annoyance, that she has a crush on Jeff Goldblum, but she also says, you know, Jurassic Park is one of her favorite films, and we're both of us are science nerds and quite enjoy that film, but that was famously filmed in Hawaii, and boy, if that wasn't on my bucket list before as a go-to travel destination, is it ever now? Because you will get a chance to see some just flowing waterfalls and just lush, you know, stunning greenery. And it's just such a place to behold. I mean, it doesn't even seem real between the grottos and the caves and the just flowers and the rocky crags and the ocean, and just this stunning, absolutely stunning place. So what we got here are newlyweds Cliff and Sydney, and they're traveling around, and he's sort of Cliff is played by Steve Zahn, who is in that Reality Bites, a kind of a not somewhat memorable summation of a 90s culture. And he cuts a kind of a Michael J. Fox figure. I mean, he's kind of small and looks very, very friendly. And he seems to be a bit of a like a beta kind of pushover. And his paramour, Sydney, is played by Mila Jovovich, obviously Resident Evil the Bruce Willis vehicle there. But she is the seemingly straightforward, a kind of housewife, and the two of them are just perfectly paired. And it'll come to me in a second. The fifth element. And they are just driving around, you know, getting the lay of the land, and one of the Hawaiian, I guess, fixers and vacation travel booking agents is trying to convince them to stay more than their allotted 3 days for some hike, which seems absolutely absurd. It must and should be much longer when you think about the kind of just beauteous nature they're subjecting themselves to. But be that as it may, this kind of wholesome duo, they go out and they rent a vehicle, and they're going to go tackle this trail. And along the way, they meet an aggressive pair of hitchhikers, one of whom is abusive to his spouse, and it's a character played really, really well by a really buff and ripped Chris Hemsworth in an early role. And man, he's fantastic. And shortly thereafter, they meet Nick, again, who claims to be an army vet who actually breached Saddam Hussein's palace in the Gulf War, and seems to be a tough-talking guy who won't cop to which division or unit he was actually participating in when pressed by Cliff. Cliff's backstory, this little nerdy kind of unassuming character, is that he's, of all things, a screenwriter. And it should be said that when you have a movie that has a screenwriter as its protagonist, well, I mean, I've seen that before, and it's something that, ironically, the screenplay actually fails the litmus test of quality. But boy, does A Perfect Getaway have dynamite banter and just rip-roaring stuff. And Nick, given all his, braggadocio and ballsiness and alpha maleness, he's been through just a litany of adventures, and he's, the most interesting man in the world, a la that beer campaign there. Was it Dos Equis? But it's like he's almost an Hemingway-esque adventurer, and when he's actually a budding screenwriter too, and presses Cliff about, maybe you could say they're Cliff notes in a way, he mistakes solecism about red herrings versus red snappers, I believe, and he gets friendly chiding from Cliff, and the two of them sort of chat about their respective businesses, and it's just great, because you have Nick, who's this seems to be a bullshit artist, but clearly has some military background, and his girlfriend, who's equally a little bit out there and a little bit of a free spirit, and the two of them are one to just drop to their skivvies and just get naked at the drop of a hat, and they're kind of very, very, wild, wonky characters. And in A Perfect Getaway, Tui introduces both them, but also the Hemsworth character and his wife, who is equally, sort of unhinged, and sets them up as characters that could or could not go a certain way. And it's really quite ingenious how this all comes together. Nick reveals a metal plate in his head because of a war injury, and that speaks to, again, maybe more of the veracity of his tale. And he, in fact, also hunts down, by bow hunting, a goat. And who knew there were actually goats inhabiting Hawaii? I haven't fact-checked this, but I thought that was pretty amazing. So you have these three disparate groups of people, and there's also news in a neighboring island of a couple who is on the lam, who is responsible for the murder of some people in Honolulu. So you have this paranoia connecting through, is a connective thread throughout the narrative of who that could possibly be, when you have three sets of couples roaming around on this random part of Hawaii. Hawaii, obviously not a very big place, and murder is probably not too frequent, especially those perpetrated by a young married couple. So, dun dun dun, what could possibly happen? Again, just really rich, just a clattering, just charming banter amongst all the principals, and their interactions with one another really lead this thing down the garden path, and you really don't know where things are going. So with the exception of a few, and I'm going to segue briefly into what I've learned here, with some storytelling techniques that fall a bit short, and I'm going to point my finger at the kind of the video footage, found footage thing, which it should be said, the nuptials of the twosome does play a role in the narrative thrust, and I'm talking about Cliff and Sydney. It's something that had to be included there, but having it as a POV video thing was more an issue of 2009, and how improvements in video and camcorder technology was really at the forefront, and something that a lot of filmmakers felt really, really compelled to include in their filmmaking. Another part is when you have in flashback form a backstory of the Cliff and Sydney couple, but also Nick and Gina, which sounds like some horrible couple John Bon Jovi would write about in Living on a Prayer or something. But yeah, Nick and Gina sounds like people from Staten Island who run a pizza shop or something. But yeah, so you have this bluish tinted flashback or narrative filling in that you get, and it spins a web of how all these characters have came to encounter one another, and that sort of is a little bit anticlimactic when you figure, and I don't want to give any spoilers here, about how these people all come to be associated with one another. Now, another thing I've learned is that you have a guide played by Anthony Ruivivar, who is, I think he was from one of these Batman series kinds of things. But you have another guide who you think will prove to be a more fruitful, more involved source, because he goes to search for the parties and when permits to explore the kind of a remote region go missing. A lot of bloodshed toward the end that is somewhat surprising, but doesn't speak to the kind of, it seems like just a cheesy way of upping the body count when it was really a very tightly compacted, almost something that could take place on stage as a theater production, when you have these six people so closely intertwined. So there are other people that, much like hikers on the Appalachian Trail, they are going to come upon one another, because I mean, Hawaii, you can't get too remote. Another thing I've learned, that you have Nine Inch Nails on the soundtrack, which is kind of bizarre. And a final thing I've learned is that David Tui also wrote a film. I mean, you gotta love The Fugitive, right? And I remember seeing also he did G.I. Jane, so he kind of infuses his films with a lot of militaristic kind of themes in that. He also did Critters 2, The Main Course. I mean, this guy's written a lot of different things. And I can't say I cared for Waterworld much, but he did that one, Terminal Velocity, lots of other things. And he certainly has a really deft touch for action, if nothing else. So even though this is something a bit atypical of his oeuvre, like, you can definitely see he's got like a lot of technical ability in directing people who, it should be said, are far better actors than Vin Diesel. That's for damn sure. This one was very surprising to me, revisiting it, as like, apart from two, I'd say, really major flaws. And I would say, like, you know, Steve Zahn is just, you know, absolutely dynamite, as is Oliphant, as the this duo of disparates and opposites there, Rosencrantz to his Guildenstern. And it's just... So the battle between the two of them, they become unlikely friends right off the bat, and it's really cool to see that kind of thing and them bonding over a mutual love of film. And it's cool seeing a screenwriter depicted in a film that has a screenplay that's actually really, really dynamite. And there's just scenes of the two of them alone skulking through the woods where you just don't know really what's going to happen. And it keeps it really does keep the audience guessing. And I'm actually quite shocked by how good this one is. And the reception is, like, you know, it's about, you know, above two-thirds based on 138 reviews. But it's, you know, generally favorable. And even the New York Times, so, you know, not to toot my own horn here, is like, I'm not the only one who thinks similarly. Genuinely satisfying, cheap thrills. And I think that's totally fair. I'm going to give this a 3, maybe even a 3.25 out of 5, because in a space that's frequently hamstrung by having very little in the way of dynamism and character development, and that's been a bugbear of the horror scene since the 80s. I mean, the investment in this one is so off the charts that you could watch a film with these people even if they if there wasn't a murder mystery, and without them secluded on their own island. They're perfectly compelling characters, each in their own right. And even though the Hemsworth character is a lesser in terms of the players in this particular production, he really does acquit himself, I would say, brilliantly as well. Cast-driven, dialogue-driven. Some of the scares are a little bit lacking toward the end, but overall, I mean, just a solid, really, really exemplary effort in its own right. And so there you go. A perfect getaway, as we all look for our own perfect getaways. And Expedia has been holding my money. I was initially going to do a getaway to Arizona and then across the border to Mexico, to Puerto Peñasco, Rocky Point, a favorite vacation spot for Arizonians. But this whole pandemic thing has put the kibosh on that. And that was by no means a perfect getaway. It was mostly one of convenience because I had somewhere to stay. But we'll see if my trip to the Big Apple materializes, and we'll see whether any sort of getaway, perfect or otherwise, will be even viable in 3 to 4 months from now. Thank you for listening. We're going to be back talking action and more horror. And I'm going to try and convince myself to revisit Saw, a film that I hold so beneath contempt. And it's a series that people who I really respect, at least in social media, have been championing. And it's something that I'm going to that I owe it to myself to consider a second look, because it's something that I find a really dismal property, and it doesn't matter whether it's the first or the fifth or God knows how many. I think they're rebooting it as well, but in the interests of keeping an open mind, I will give that one a whirl. Anyway, I hope you saw some value in this little discussion here, and we shall talk to you soon. Take care. Thank you.